We're back again. It's Chase and Josh with Factor Fantasy. That's Chase and I'm Josh, and we are here to give you the next sequence in Season 1 of Demon Slayer here today. Last week, we went through Episodes 1, 2, and 3. This week, Chase is going to take us through Episodes 4, 5, and 6. It's been a resounding success so far. It's been exciting to cover something that we typically don't on this show. And, you know, the numbers don't lie, man. So before we go ahead and dive into it, I'll let Chase say a few words.
Let's get it going, man. Episode 2 for Factor Fantasy, Demon Slayer Edition. So looking forward to this one today. Got a lot of more great material. You know, we're climbing up the mountain here, a literal mountain. And it just gets better.
Like 8 mountains in this thing, isn't there? There's so many damn mountains in Demon Slayer, bro. It's like Mount Fukasani. We got Mount Sagiri. We got Mount what the fuck ever. But I'm with you, man. We're all up all these damn mountains.
Wait till we start climbing up castles. That's a whole nother thing. But with that, man, yeah. Cheers, brother. Let's get a cheers for Tanjiro and Nezuko right now. That's all we got in our party right now.
That's right. We're going to put the glasses in the air, and then I'll let you kind of get diving into episode 4.
Episode 4. Cheers, brother. Okay, so episode 4. One thing I want to mention from last week, remember Tanjiro cut the boulder that Jay Nelly took us through. And one thing I want to say is as he was about to cut the boulder, he saw this thread that was there. And it's almost like as he gets closer to his enemies, you'll see in the series as it continues to go on, he sees this opening thread as he gets close to his opponent. So Tanjiro has cut the boulder, and Urokodaki tells Tanjiro he never had any intention of sending Tanjiro to final selection, which is going to be his next moment to really prove himself to become part of the Demon Slayer Corps. Because he didn't want to see any more people die, and he didn't think that Tanjiro would be able to cut that boulder. And Urokodaki congratulates Tanjiro, and they're eating dinner, and he tells him there is no more he can do for him before final selection, and he is prepared to go. And Urokodaki tells Tanjiro, the more a demon eats, the more powerful they are. And he gives Tanjiro a mask like the one Sabito had. And he said, it's called a warding mask. It has been enchanted with special spells to help protect you from harm. So now we know these masks actually play a role. And Nezuko is sleeping, and Urokodaki says that he will watch over her while Tanjiro is gone. And Tanjiro begins to leave, and he yells to Urokodaki and says, say hi to Sabito and Makomo for me. And Urokodaki stops briefly and says to himself, Tanjiro, that's impossible. How does he know the names of the dead? And so what'd you think of that moment there? Did you think something's up?
Well, I mean, that was a kind of the full circle right then and there. He said, how does he know the names of the dead? Makes a lot of sense on how they disappeared into the fog. And, you know, when the dust was settled, he thought he'd cut the warding mask off of Sabito, and it ended up being that boulder there. And, you know, it just kind of makes a lot of sense too, to where, if you remember from last week, we were talking about it, how Sabito had no scent. You know, it makes sense how he didn't have any scent if he wasn't alive. Yeah, so thought that was pretty cool, man.
For sure. So then Tanjiro, as he's heading to the mountains, he sees these wisteria leaves that are there, these like purple leaves. And despite being out of season, he sees that they're all around the gathering point for these people of members of Final Selection that are trying to join the Demon Slayer Corps on Mount Fujikasane. Is that how you say that?
I think so, man. These ones are fun. Like, the Japanese names are fun to try to pronounce. Usually I'm pretty good with these, but I'm not gonna be much better than you here on these ones.
And when he gets to the top of the mountain, he sees these two twin girls. And one thing I want to say about this, a lot of people will think they're twins, but I don't want to give anything away later on, but they're actually quintuplets, ironically. But yeah, these two twin girls are there. What do you think about these two twins and like the purple with the purple eyes?
They reminded me a lot of Sabrina those episodes there in what was it, Lavender Town or whatever, or Saffron City, sorry, yeah, the people in Saffron City when they're going through the whole ordeal with the ghost Pokemon, I thought that it was yeah, like the psychic Pokemon, and you had to use the ghosts to defeat them. I thought that was really cool. They were very like spacey, almost like in a dream like state. It was almost that they were ethereal. They weren't really there, but they were there kind of deal. So I thought it was a little bit on the fun side of spooky.
For sure, I agree 100%. So the two twin girls then tell the group that the Wisteria Blossoms are there to prevent the demons on the mountain from coming to that area. And they have been put there specifically by the Demon Slayer Corps, and the demons are on the mountain to test them during final selection. So we know they're going to have to face these demons on the mountain to overcome final selection, which we're going to go into that in a minute. But after they leave the area, there are no more Wisteria Blossoms further beyond that point, and they will have to fight these demons that are starving for food without protection. And in order to complete the final selection process, the group must survive for 7 days beyond that point without the Wisteria leaves protection. And then the final selection trial begins. Tanjiro starts the trial and heads east to try to use the sunlight to his advantage. This was smart, by the way. As you can see here, you can kind of tell he's learned a little bit from Uro Kodaki, because he's not trying to be the best, just chop it off heads here. You know, he's trying to survive the night. What do you think about this tactic?
Yeah, it was a great tactic, utilizing your natural protections that you would have. Obviously, the Wisteria is gone, so you know, it's a free-for-all beyond that point. But to use whatever level of protections you still have naturally, yeah, it was a really good tactic. And I'm curious if other final selection contestants thought anything similar. You know, I wonder if they all, or maybe even they thought differently, that there was other options that they decided to go with. It'd been cool to kind of see the strategy each contestant would use. So, yeah, no, I definitely thought it was pretty cool.
That's actually a very good point. It really makes me wonder that too. But so Tanjiro heads east because his thoughts are that's where the sun's going to rise first. Despite his plan, though, a demon corners him, and then he is attacked from behind by another second demon. Tanjiro blocks the attacking demon from the front and keeps them in a line of sight. But as the two lunge at him, he smells the opening thread, which, remember, as he's getting close to these enemies, he can see this opening thread. And he says, water breathing, fourth form, striking tide, that he learned from Uro Kodaki, and cuts the heads off both the demons, the first two demons Tanjiro has truly used his training towards. And then Tanjiro notices that both the demons turn to ash because of the Nichiren, like the sword he has, right, is the one that causes them to turn to ash. What are your thoughts on this in this moment, though? Because is it just a regular sword, or did Uro Kodaki give him one at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm curious if at the final selection start, maybe, you know what, yes, I do believe Uro Kodaki gave him that sword to use in the interim before, you know, if he survives, I guess we can say. Like, he has to get his own, and we'll learn a little bit more about that today of how getting your own sword happens. But yeah, I do believe Uro Kodaki lent him his sword to use for the final selection.
Yeah, because that's what I wanted to make sure of. That wasn't like a plot hole that I saw there, because making sure, you know, we're not letting anything slide here. But yeah, I think so too. So then Tanjiro recalls that the Nichiren sword is the only sword that can kill a demon, and they are the weakest at the neck. And then Tanjiro sees this massive giant green demon, which I call it the hand demon, because you'll see it has all these hands and arms, and it's like behind the forest walking around, almost like Godzilla in a way. And then we cut over to, remember, Makomo asks Sabito if Tanjiro will be okay, and Sabito says he doesn't know if Tanjiro's training will be enough for what he's about to face. And back to Tanjiro, he's watching the hand demon eat a contestant whole in front of him and using its giant hand limbs to grab another contestant. And Tanjiro dashes in the way and fights his inner fear and says, water breathing, second form, water wheel. And this was really cool. It was like literally a bridge mill of water. And it spins and cuts the demon's arm off in front of him, releasing the contestant that was there. What did you think about finally seeing the forms kind of come into play for the first time here?
It was interesting, and I wonder, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of us, but it almost gives me vibes of when, you know, in the beginning parts of Harry Potter, when you cast a spell, you've got to say the name of the spell, but as you kind of advance and you grow into a upper echelon, you don't even have to say the incantation anymore. I wonder if it'll ever get to that point for Tanjiro where he can just use these water breathing forms without screaming water breathing form, whatever one he uses at whichever time. So just something I want to keep in the back of my mind for later on.
That's actually a very good point, because in a few weeks there's another guy. You know, we don't see him use a lot of he doesn't name a lot of movements he makes, so yeah, much later on. But the demon, the green hand demon, notices Tanjiro's mask that Urokodaki gave him. And the hand demon says, hey, look at that. It's another one of those sweet little foxes. And remember, his mask is like the shape of a fox. And Tanjiro questions this. And the hand demon says, hey, fox cub, the year, are we still in Meiji? And Tanjiro says it's the Taisho period. So we can see it's been decades since this demon has been there. And the demon responds furiously because he's been stuck on the mountain for years because of the wisteria blossoms have kept him there. And he curses Urokodaki's name. And Tanjiro asks the demon if he knows Urokodaki, and the hand demon tells him that Urokodaki captured him and brought him to the mountain, and that was 47 years ago during the Edo period. And the hand demon tells Tanjiro he's eaten 50 people and 13 of Urokodaki's students, and Tanjiro will be number 14. And the demon made a promise to himself. He will kill every last student of Urokodaki because of what he's did to him. And remember how we were talking before, the more a demon eats, the more powerful they grow. The hand demon says, you know, the ones that stood out to me the most were those two. The boy's hair was an unusual shade of pink, a scar by his mouth. He was the most powerful of the lot. The other was a girl who wore a flowery kimono, small, not too much power, but awfully agile. And Tanjiro realizes, full circle moment here, Sabito and Makomo were killed by this hand demon, and the whole time, Sabito and Makomo have been ghosts. What do you think about that?
It was something that we learned from Urokodaki, but Tanjiro himself didn't know. So it was the realization that Tanjiro had that he was having these interactions and these trainings with spiritual beings. I thought that was pretty dope.
Yeah, and then so Tanjiro, at this point, of course, he's realized Sabito and Makomo were dead the entire time he was interacting with them and training with them. And the demon mentions he recognized Tanjiro as one of Urokodaki's students because of the mask. And all of Urokodaki's students all wear masks like that in the style that he wears them. And the hand demon tells Tanjiro that Makoma was enraged when she found out about all the students he ate. And when she charged at him, it shows a flashback of him ripping her limb from limb, and he feasted on her body. This series doesn't hold back in graphic style for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was something that was, you know, you think about it, this, the way that Makoma was depicted and what she appears on screen is like a very small, maybe anywhere between the ages of 11 and 14 year old girl. And they didn't give a shit. They're like, ah, nope, you're gone. And it doesn't matter who you are. We're going to show you exactly what we do here. So yeah, that was pretty insane.
So Tanjiro, enraged, rushes the hand demon despite watching his breathing. So he's not watching what he's doing here, but he cuts some of the limbs of the hand demon but gets hammered back, and it smashes him in his side. And he crashes into a tree, and his mask shatters that Urokodaki gave him as he falls to the ground. And Tanjiro hears Sabito's voice, and Sabito says, "Calm down, Tanjiro. You're breathing, it's uneven, forget about us." And Tanjiro hears his little brother's faint voice calling him to wake up, and he wakes up out of this state, and the hand demon attempts to strike Tanjiro, but as he's waking up, he flips backwards and avoids the attack, and the hand demon lunges at Tanjiro again. But Tanjiro strikes through three of the arms, but they continuously regenerate. So now we're seeing more of how these demons are regenerating so quickly. And the hand demon mentions not even Sabito could cut his head off. So basically, good luck with that. And in a flashback, Sabito jumps at the green hand demon and breaks his sword while trying to strike him. And the hand demon punches Sabito's skull into pieces. And so Tanjiro faces his enemy and strikes down four attacking arms and continues to charge and is doing aerial flips and jumps that's attacking him from below ground, because this demon can use its arms to go underground and try to grab Tanjiro's legs. But in midair, Tanjiro's jumping at him and the hand demon attempts to grab him in midair, and then Makomo questions whether Tanjiro can defeat this hand demon, and Sabito, hand demon, because of how thick its neck is, and Sabito says, "I can't say whether or not he will win or lose today. However, one fact is irrefutable either way. Tanjiro cut through this boulder, the toughest and largest of them all." Tanjiro deflects the demon's striking hand and lands on his arm. Tanjiro runs up the arm of the demon and breathes slowly, total concentration breathing. Tanjiro slices through six arms as he dashes forward to the demon's head. Water breathing, first form. The demon reaches out to crush Tanjiro's head just like Sabito, and the opening threat is noticed. "Water surface flash," Tanjiro yells, and cuts off the demon's head. And that's how episode 4 ends. What are your takeaways from episode 4?
I thought it was cool. It was probably our most action-packed episode to this point. The actual battle between a few demons, the ones that weren't so tough, that he was able to take out pretty quickly. And then, obviously, you call it the hand demon, the big green monster looking, well, I don't even know how I'd characterize it, so I'll use the hand demon that Chase said there. But yeah, I thought that it was the first time we got to see a high level of action, that, because up until this point we didn't see Tanjiro's family get massacred, we didn't really see him battle anyone during training. It's just him working hard, and then the closest we got was spar training with what we just realized was a ghost. So it wasn't even real, right? So this was the first real taste of action we got. And I guess if you wanted to count the initial demon from episode 2, you can. But that was before Tanjiro really knew anything at all. You know, he had zero training. That's when Urokodaki agreed to test him to see if he would be able to. So that, I don't really consider that a whole lot of action. This episode is where the action really started. And you got to see as Chase was mentioning, the water breathing techniques used in action, and I thought those were pretty cool. And yeah, you know, I as a episode, and then you know, obviously this is just this one part, because it hasn't really explained, you know, it's not like he just kills this demon and then that's it. He's still got to survive the rest of the way to Sunlight, so you're left off in this episode not really knowing what else is coming next, if something else is coming next. And so I like the way it kind of left you off there with that big conclusion to that battle, and it was really cool. I enjoyed it. It was an entertaining episode, and like I said, the really first big taste of what battle would be like with Tanjiro fully trained by Urokodaki against some of the demons, and especially that demon, which is the one that Urokodaki captured and brought and put on Mount Fukusajani, or whatever we kind of call it. So in any event, man, those are my takeaways on episode 4. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I thought it was awesome how the biggest thing I liked about it, it wasn't even that, oh, this demon was so big and powerful and green. It was the writing. I really enjoyed the full circle moment and how they really brought the first threat of a demon, which we know it's definitely going to get a lot more dangerous from here. But the first threat of the demon was, it was such a great demon to bring in because of how full circle it was. And all the pieces that came to play, such as noticing Uro Kodaki's masks, and he was the one that put him there with the Wisteria leaves, and Sabito, and Makomo, and now you realize all this moments from past episodes. So I really like that they've decided to take their time with this and build it up. So that's what I'll say from there. So now, as we're going into episode 5, speaking of full circle moments, it starts out with a flashback of a demon killing people and bodies everywhere. And appearing behind the demon is Mr. Uro Kodaki, and he blocks the demon attack, and the demon attempts to flee. And Uro Kodaki slashes its hand, and the demon catches its breath as Uro Kodaki approaches. And it's like a younger Uro Kodaki, and Uro Kodaki dives from a roof off a building and attempts to slash it. And we realize it's a flashback of the hand demon that was there before and almost how it got there. And the green hand demon sees Uro Kodaki as Tanjiro is slashing its head off from before. And it's almost like a little nub of a head because this thing is so damn fat. It needed to hit the Stairmaster. No offense, but the head goes off and the green hand demon bursts and burns into ash. And the demon is crying as it burns and realizes he also ate its brother during this time. And Tanjiro is like, it almost has like a sentimental aspect to it in a way. And Tanjiro is like praying that the next time this man is born, to not let it turn into a demon again. What'd you think about like this aspect of Demon Slayer?
It's something that, you know, it will play a part moving forward. It almost seems, and I don't want to ruin anything or go too crazy with me going off on a tangent here, but what I will say is that it speaks to Tanjiro's empathy and his understanding that this evil just didn't come out of nowhere. You know, some events in its life led to where it is today as this horrible monster that it's viewed as, who kills humans and eats them. And so in its last moments of life, it always shows a flashback typically of the origin where the demon came from. And that's a reoccurring theme throughout the series. And I do find that a unique aspect that Demon Slayer has that other animes that they just don't typically do that. I just thought that it was interesting. It was very, very interesting that it's not just, okay, I defeated this really hard new boss at the level I'm currently at now, and now it's time to level up. It's, no, we're taking a moment to appreciate that at one point in time, this was an innocent human that had bad things happen. Things happened along the way. Choices were made, X, Y, Z, whatever the circumstances are, and that's what led it to here. And so, you know, he's still showing that empathy that Uro Kodaki was talking about, even to demons. And even though Uro Kodaki saw it as a weakness, you know, it's very arguable that it's his greatest strength. So that, those are my thoughts on that.
I agree. So then Tanjiro is praying to not let the man that became the demon to be born into a demon again. And then Sabito and Makomo and all the others that were killed by this green hand demon appear before Tanjiro, and the souls are set free. This reminded me almost of in Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows when, you know, Lily and James and Sirius and Remus and all these people appeared from the Resurrection Stone in a way. But then Tanjiro attempts to ask a demon caught in tree vines, how do you change a demon once they have turned? Still trying to get answers for Nezuko to change her back. And the demon doesn't answer and charges at him. And Tanjiro is forced to slice his head off. Rain pours and thunder pounds and rumbles as more demons charge at Tanjiro. And he cuts them down one by one. And he continues to run until he's surrounded by Wisteria blossoms again. And the sun rises. Tanjiro has made it and survived final selection. Only 4 contestants remain. What do you think about that? Only 4 remain from this final selection.
it really went to show that the final selection is not to be taken lightly. It's not that everyone who wants to become a Demon Slayer is one. I don't know exactly how many started out. I didn't put the number down. But the fact of all of them that tried, only four survived. It's not even just like four were successful. No, four survived. Everyone else is dead. So all the ones that wanted to become a Demon Slayer, they are dead, dude. Like, it's crazy. So, yeah, it really spoke to the importance and the high level of difficulty of passing the final selection, what that really means and how that is, you know, four out of whatever. Yeah, that's a very low percentage.
And we get introduced to these four that really pay attention to him, because they were really, even though you don't see them much now, they will really play a role much later on. So at this point, only four remain. One, the contestant Tanjiro was trying to save, was actually killed during this time. Yeah, because when he blacked out against the green hand demon, the one he was trying to save against the hand demon wound up dying. But he notices that the four remain. One is a blonde boy named Zenitsu, one of my favorites. And he's next to Tanjiro. And he's like, isn't sure how he survived. He's stressed out. He's kind of looking around. And on Tanjiro's right, there is a guy in purple with like a mohawk style. And it's Ginya Shinizawa. And the one next to him is a girl with like a butterfly beret, and kind of like a kimono in purple, and her name's Kano. And then the twin girls welcome the survivors back and congratulate them. And Ginya is pissed, and he asks for answers and what his next steps are. But the girls tell him to have patience. And the girls tell the group first they must all get their uniforms. Their rank will then be engraved on the back of their hand. And the girls tell the group there are 10 ranks in total. Rank 1, Kino. Rank 2, Kinoto. Rank 3, Hinoi. Rank 4, Hinoto. Rank 5, Tishonoi. Rank 6, Tishinoto. Rank 7, Kano. Rank 8, Kanoto. Rank 9, Mizunoi. Rank 10, Mizunoto. And they will all start at Mizunoto, the lowest rank in the Demon Slayer Corps. The girls then tell the group they will be given the chance to select the ore that will be used to forge their Nichiren swords, but it will be 10 to 15 days before the weapons are ready. And each of the survivors are now recognized as Demon Slayers, and are assigned their own Kazuka crow. What do you think of these crows? These are awesome, man.
Gave me some Game of Thrones vibes with the ravens sending messages back and forth. No, it was pretty cool. They are a little bit different in the fact that they're almost comical in a way, and they'll say some shit and they're like, oh, not like that. Like, it just, you know, I thought it was really, it was fun. It was nothing. I didn't take the... It's hard for me to say that too, because there's a few times that I can remember that they do play a pivotal role in certain moments, but not often. So it's just more like a side show that doesn't add terribly too much to it, but it just like it's fun. I don't know. I didn't think too much on them.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. It just gave more of that like out of the box fantasy fiction element. But yeah, the crows facilitate communication between the corpse and the slayers and how they get their mission. And Ginya goes off the rails here. He is demanding his color-changing katana now, because these swords will change color based on the wielder. And he starts to punch one of the twins, and she's just sitting there taking it. And Ginya holds her by the hair, and Tanjiro stops Ginya and threatens to break his arm. And Tanjiro pushes Ginya off. And then the new core members choose their ore. And Kaguya Ubiyoshiki is the head of the Demon Slayer Corps. And he is like poisoned / burned. He's kind of like the head of all this. What do you think of this guy?
Yeah, I didn't have a whole lot of thoughts initially. I was curious about the obviously the appearance that he portrayed, and I, like how he got that way. And obviously you see as the series goes on the progression of certain things too. So yeah, you know, I didn't really have a whole lot of thoughts on him initially, just was you know, an interesting introduction.
And he's informed of the four new members from his crew. And now Tanjiro reflects on his failure so far in finding a cure for Nezuko as he makes his way back home to Urokodaki. And Tanjiro makes it home at nightfall and sees Nezuko is awake and walking around. And Tanjiro is in tears, hugs her, because think about it, she's been asleep this whole time, even from when he went up the mountain. And Urokodaki is there and so happy he's back, and they hug Tanjiro and Nezuko. They have this big group hug, and Tanjiro is alive and he's so happy he was able to kill the green hand demon. And Urokodaki informs Tanjiro that there are different kinds of demons, and the blood demon art is a special spell that some use to give them abilities. And he warns Tanjiro that fighting against them will be more difficult than anything he has ever encountered, but he doesn't doubt he will be able to handle it. And then Tanjiro asks if blood demon art is why Nezuko was able to recover. And Urokodaki specifically tells Tanjiro he doesn't think this is so, and he believes Nezuko can recover her strength by sleeping instead of consuming flesh like other demons do. Days pass, and Haganazuka has forged Tanjiro's sword. See, he's like the... He's interesting. He's like the sword maker, and he wears this, like, they call it a clown mask, but it's like this mask with this weird face on it. And he delivers Tanjiro's his Nichiren sword, and he says, this is a Nichiren sword. The materials for this kind of sword, pay attention to this, because this is a big full circle moment that will come much later on. This is a Nichiren sword. The materials of this kind of sword only come from the mountain closest to the sun, made of scarlet iron sand and scarlet ore, unique. They produce steel that can absorb sunlight. So kind of a foreshadowing moment there for much later on. And he says, hey, you're a child of brightness, aren't you? Well, isn't that lucky? You know how your eyes have a reddish hue to them? When a family that works with fire has a child, it's considered lucky and causes signs for celebration. That means there's a good chance your sword will turn red, right, Urokodaki? And Urokodaki just responds, yes, but then blames Haganazuka for talking too much. It's just like, shut up. And Haganazuka tells Tanjiro that the Nichiren swords are also referred to as color-changing katanas because they depend on the bearer where they change color. And Tanjiro draws his sword and it turns black. And Haganazuka freaks out because he was hoping to see a red sword. He's pissed off. And Urokodaki even says, it's a little unusual. And Tanjiro's crow appears and gives him orders to go to the town northwest of the location because young girls are disappearing. And a young boy in the town is seen walking around with a girl and turns around and she's gone. And Tanjiro's crow tells him this is his first assignment as a member of the Demon Slayer Corps and prepare himself well. What do you think of these swords, Jay Nelly?
I thought they were cool. I do like the way they look. They're very aesthetically pleasing. And I'll be honest, I was a little disappointed when his sword first turned black also. I was hoping to see a nice red one or a dope-ass blue one like Tomioka had. I thought they would have been really nice to get something started here. But I honestly, I kind of like it because it leads more to the story of it being unique. And they had mentioned that typically great Demon Slayers, the ones that are really renowned and the most badass of the badass, none of them really ever had a black sword. Like, so it was almost as if they're the weaker and not successful. The ones who draw the black swords or who the ores turn black, whatever it may be, it's almost a bad thing. Like, hey, yeah, we're not going to expect much from you. You know, it's like you got that wand choosing from Harry Potter. It's like, ooh, great things can be expected. You know, but it's one of those things. I was a little disappointed. But the swords themselves, if you look at them like all laid out, and the ones that we see later on in the series, they are some really cool looking samurai swords for sure.
Yeah, what are your takeaways for this episode, Jay Nelly?
Yeah, takeaways are that we met someone who's very, very important. He was told who all survived and how, like, there was only four of them. And he is someone that plays a pivotal role in the entirety of the Demon Slayer core. So that's someone to keep an eye out for and keep an eye on. We got Tanjiro has his own sword finally instead of borrowing Udo Kodaki's. And we're going to see what he's able to do with that sword. And, you know, I messed around a little bit last week when I had mentioned there's some foreshadowing about breaking swords and things of that nature. So we'll see what changes are made to weapons down the line. But where it stands today, yeah, it was just, this one was more of a, I wouldn't say a filler episode, but it was after it was one of the episodes after Big Climax. So you're already like hyped up on that adrenaline of what you just saw. So I wouldn't say it was like a letdown per se, but it was definitely more of an even keel informational episode, more so than a must see action packed. Just a sequence of events, I guess. So overall, it was good. I enjoyed it, but after that really cool first battle we got with the what Chase called the hand demon, I was hopeful that something extra was going to happen. But I think we're going to be leading into that coming up here in the next episode. So realistically, episode 5, it's a good episode. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just it was such like a come down after that big rush of adrenaline you got when Tanjiro killed his first real strong demon that ended up killing some of the people who trained. I want to say, it's hard for me to say because it's not like Sabito and Makomo trained him in real life, and they did in a way because they were part of the spiritual realm, and so yeah, he did see those things. But realistically, anyone who else was an onlooker would have saw Tanjiro just training by himself. So it's hard to say that he defeated the monster that beat the people who trained him, but he had definitely defeated the demon that killed all of Uro Kodaki's students. There were 14 or 13 of them, and he would have been the 14th. So, it was definitely a more of a conclusion, or like almost like a shutting of the page on, okay, Tanjiro went from the training, he defeated that first demon, and now we've turned the page to you're an official member of the Demon Slaying Corps, and now it's almost as if the next start of this next part of his journey. So overall, I thought the episode was good.
For sure. Yeah, it was definitely an informative episode, I would say. I did like the full circle moments, how, you know, Tanjiro came home and now Nezuko's awake. I thought that was great because it's been all this time, and Uro Kodaki was glad to see him back after, you know, that demon had been there all those years that he put there. You got to see the rankings of each rank a demon slayer gains or goes through as they're gaining more training and more experience. And I like that you got to see the Nishirin swords. So it's good stuff. So now to episode 6, man. So Tanjiro is in his new uniform. So he gets a brand new Demon Slayer uniform. It has like the symbol on the back. It's got the black with like the white belt. But he still keeps like a piece of himself too. He keeps that green checkered cardigan that he has. And Uro Kodaki explains to Tanjiro that his uniform is made with special fiber that makes it water resistant and non-flammable. And low level demons, fangs and talons are incapable of penetrating the new uniform fabric. But the Nishirin sword, this is what Jay Nelly was saying a little bit last week, last episode, varies from owner to owner and teaches, and it's each hue of the sword has its own unique traits. So for instance, you know, if you're going to have a blue one, that's going to help you more in water breathing. If you're going to have a red one, goes into something else. You know, each of them have their own style, but he has that black one. And Uro Kodaki tells Tanjiro, there are not many demon slayers with black blades and very little is known about them. Some believe they're a bad omen. And Uro Kodaki tells Tanjiro that black blades are believed to be wielded only by swordsmen that have little chance of going far. And Tanjiro says that he doesn't care if he's destined to be great. He vows to get Nezuko cured and turn her back to normal. So once again, we're seeing, you know, Tanjiro, a lot of people forget, he's not trying to be this great warrior. He's really just trying to save his sister, which is what this is all about. And then Uro Kodaki presents Tanjiro with a box, and this was really cool. It's this wooden box that he's made to carry Nezuko around in during the day, and it's built from light wood and Kirikumo cedar, which is coated in rock liqueur, so it's easier to carry around and durable, so it's light and very heavy. This is really cool too, because I was at a cosplay convention one time, and someone built that box and actually put their daughter in it as Nezuko, and I thought that was really cool. But what do you think about this box, Jay Nelly?
Yeah, no, it was interesting. I don't know if there's it just was another an upgrade basically from what he already had, and which is important, because what they had before, that the strips of bamboo and like that, so yeah, it was just an upgrade and helped, you know, probably protect her from the sunlight more, maybe made it a little more lightweight depending on the type of wood that was used. So it was just a nice little gesture of a gift from Uro Kodaki.
For sure. So then Nezuko gets in the box, and before Tanjiro leaves, Uro Kodaki fixes Tanjiro's collar, wishes him farewell, and Tanjiro leaves for the town. And Tanjiro arrives with Nezuko at the town, and Kazumi is the man we saw earlier at the end of the episode with the missing girl that's wounded. And the people of the town are talking about the abduction of the women in this town, and Tanjiro approaches Kazumi and asks him about where Satoko, the woman he was with, vanished. And Tanjiro smells a faint, uneven scent of a demon haunting the area. And Kazumi has a flashback of getting beat by Satoko's father for losing her, and he's almost wondering, like, you know, whether he took her, what happened. And then Tanjiro reminds Kazumi that demons are only active at night, so there's no time for them to rest, and he picks up the scent in the area. Kazumi realizes Tanjiro is part of the Demon Slayer Corps. The members of the town lock their doors because of the demon threat at night, and you see this dark mass that slides across the wooden floor following this girl. And the dark mass, it almost appears like a swamp, or I thought like Freddy Krueger-like, and it surrounds the girl, and the arms appear to take her in the bed, and the demonic arms cover her mouth and drag her down below as Tanjiro is rushing towards the demonic scent. That's what I love about this show. It has almost like a horror aspect of it. What do you think about this like horror aspect of the show?
Yeah, sometimes you do see a little spooky vibes type of deal where things of this nature happen. I think it's an additional feather in the cap to where, you know, like, and I'll mention this more so when we get deeper into Demon Slayer, because there are issues that I have with it as a whole, but I will say that the creativity is not an issue that I have. That I will say that. So I think it's very creative, and they add these subtle tones to it without making it over and you know, sometimes when you try to add a little bit of flavor, you do it a little bit too much, and it almost seems forced. You know how we were talking about in the Harry Potter films, it really forced Hermione Granger's character on you, where in the book it just naturally comes. So this is one of the situations where more naturally, it's not them trying too hard to force it to be spooky or give a horror aspect, you know, but it comes naturally, and especially with the whole name being Demon Slayer, obviously demons is going to have some horror aspect to it, and they do a good job of it being subtle. And you can almost, as you mentioned, compare it to other works that aren't even necessarily fantasy fiction. You know, mention Freddy Krueger, or, you know, we talk a little bit about in The Witcher, where that the Haunting of Hill House type of creature, whatever we decided to call it. I forget
the Striga? Was it the Striga?
No. I'm talking about the body, body monster. But you had said something along the lines.
Silent Hill House.
The Silent Hill. Yeah, that's what it is. The Silent Hill creature there. That was kind of, you know, those kind of, that kind of aspect to it. So yeah, dude, I thought that they did a good job having the undertones but not trying to force it.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. But so Tanjiro picks up the scent of the demon and the human girl in the alleyway, and he stops and draws his sword. Despite no appearance, Tanjiro smells the scent on the ground and stabs it. Blood splashes upward out of the ground, and Tanjiro sees it's a demon arm holding the girl, and Tanjiro pulls the girl out of the dark mass, ripping her kimono, and Tanjiro holds the unconscious girl as the demon appears from the black mass. And this demon was kind of cool looking. Like, it had like the horns and like the red eyes and the blue hair and the purple face. And Tanjiro recalls Uro Kodaki's words about blood demon art. And the demon screeches and uses its horns, and the demon sinks back into the mass, and Tanjiro tries to find it through its scent. But three demons, it multiplies itself, and three demons appear from the mass, all looking the same, and surround Tanjiro. And then Tanjiro attempts to use his fifth form of water breathing, but is forced to dodge the oncoming assault by the three demons. Tanjiro slows down and dodges the attack and remembers like some words, and he goes, "Take it easy, you got this." He says, "Water breathing, eight form, waterfall basin." And this was cool, like a waterfall, like the sword slashes onto all three multiple demons at one time, almost like rain. And then he has this flashback of Uro Kodaki where he says, "Only one demon has been here for over 1,000 years and has turned all the others, and he might know how to turn Nezuko back to human, and his name is Muzan Kabutsuji." So remember that name, that's important. And Tanjiro then cut several limbs but missed all the vulnerable heads of the three demons because he switched forms halfway through attacking them. And Tanjiro realizes that all the demons have the same scent. So it's the same demon split into three. It's not three different demons. And as the demon appears as one form in front of Tanjiro, Tanjiro uses his second form of water breathing, water wheel again, but misses and slices the shoulder of the demon. The demon appears again and criticizes Tanjiro for getting in the way, and the demon multiplies itself to two demons, so there's another one behind him, and says more calmly, "Not to worry, they'll get their fill, and kind of scolds Tanjiro and taunts him in a way. And Tanjiro remembers how his family was slaughtered by demons and slashes the arm off the first demon in front of him, but misses its head again. And the demon transports through the black mass and sinks into the ground and then goes out of the wall and almost hits Tanjiro. But Nezuko opens the wooden box and kicks the demon's head off. So clearly Nezuko has some kicking demon powers here from what we've seen in the beginning. What do you think about this? Nezuko coming to save the day out of the box, man.
Yeah, I thought that was... she always seems to step in right when Tanjiro needs it. You know, he was going to be put in a bad spot there. You know what? This demon, too, was really interesting. You know, you had mentioned it splits into three spots. But like, I don't know if you noticed like, with this like teeth grinding. It was another cool... They do a good job of not making any two demons too similar. You know, right. It's not... like you're okay, well, this guy's doing the same thing as the other demon, you know, just a little bit stronger. Okay, no, like they actually do a pretty fucking good job of making them all different. And you pretty much, and I haven't really gone back and done the math on it, but I would say if not every episode, at least every other episode, there's a demon introduced, you know, and for the most part. Maybe I'm off a couple episodes here and there if it's telling a story, if it's like a big boss battle or something, so it's the same demon. For the most fucking part, a new demon's introduced very frequently, which makes it all the more impressive for them to come up with these new creative ideas for what these demons do. But to answer your question about Nezuko stepping in and saving the day, yeah, that's what she does, man. Sisters and brothers that take care of each other.
For sure. So then the demon in front of Tanjiro recovers and withdraws back into the black mask as Nezuko steps out of the box and is preparing to attack and protect her brother. and the two are going to fight together. And Tanjiro recalls Uro Kodaki telling him that he was convinced Nezuko why Tanjiro was at Final Selection, to protect people at all cost, and demons are her enemies. And the two demons appear from the ground through the black mask, and through the black mass, and Nezuko, enraged, dashes towards the two demons and downward kicks them, and the episode ends.
Yeah, dude, that was a cool... This is a little bit of what we were talking about for episode 5 of, I wouldn't say the downswing, but this kind of took it right back into the excitement. You know, he's on his journey now. It almost reminds me of Ash Ketchum with his Pokemon. You're going through the different towns and fighting these little gym leaders, or at least the trainers on the way to fight the big gym leaders. And, you know, you'll have those periods here and there where it's the lull between the next big thing. And this was the next new journey. Now we've got a new demon that we haven't seen before. Like I said, it's got its own different abilities. It can split itself into a few different versions of itself, up to 3, it looks like. And then it can come out of the walls and the ground. And, you know, we'll see a little bit more about what they are actually doing to, when they come out of these black splotches or whatever you want to call them. We'll find more about that next week a little bit. But I thought the episode it had action in it. It was the next stage in his journey. There wasn't anything I thought, you know, how last week I was talking about, when, like, I'm not really sure if this whole demon killing thing is a plot hole or not, with it smashing the head over the rock. There's nothing that I really had in this episode or any other ones where I'm like, wow, I think that this could be a problem if it's not looked at a certain way, or if we can explain it a different way. There's nothing like that in these ones. You know, we had, you know, episode 4 and the final selection process, that was exciting. We had episode 5, which is kind of the aftermath, and now here in episode 6 that we have another problem to overcome. You know, we got this demon that's stealing women from beds and the street and all this, and Tanjiro shows up and he's got a pretty much, yo, you're in the Demon Slayer Corps now, so show us what you got. And yeah, this is a good start, almost like, because it's not, there's no conclusion to this battle with these demons right here in episode 6. That's gonna kind of come into next week's episode more so, but I did find it great, and I thought it was kind of cool. You almost left you off on a cliffhanger of, all right, well, now what happens? Like, how does this battle play out? So that was good overall.
Yeah, I thought it was really creative. Like, I call them almost like the swamp demons, which we'll find out later on. But it was really cool. I thought it was very creative the way they come out of that black mask and kind of kidnap people. And just like you said, you know, Nezuko almost has like that Dumbledore aspect. Like, she just happens to show up right at the right time, like to the point Tanjiro's getting his ass handed to him, and then she comes in and saves the day. So now we're climbing, you know, just like that song, running up that hill, running up that road, or whatever it says. So, yeah, man, did you have any debates for the day?
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you a little bit about the final selection. I think that's where I really want to focus on this, because I'm curious. You know, they said that when Uro Kodaki was going through the Demon Slayer Corps, I don't know if he mentioned how long the Demon Slayer Corps has been around for, but how many of these contestants do you think... Do you think the number's in the hundreds or in the thousands or the hundreds of thousands of contestants who really thought they wanted to be Demon Slayers only to have their life end right there in Mount Fugashikahani or whatever? I don't know how to say it. But can you just imagine for a second, you have this big goal of, I'm going to, you know, do my best to protect humans, and, you know, you can't even get past the final selection process because you end up getting killed. I'm just curious. My debate is, how many over the period of time? We saw, I don't know, maybe let's just call it 20 to 30. I didn't count them. But out of all the 20 to 30 that we saw specifically in episode 4, 4 survived. So I'm wondering, if you do that math, how often do they hold final selection processes every year? Is it a yearly thing? Is it a monthly thing? We don't really get answers to that. But, dude, what do you think the body count is for the final selection process from the dating back to the beginning of the Demon Slayer core?
Oh, it's got to be in the thousands, right? I would think. I mean, think about it this way, too. What's wild is think about the ones that thought they could really make it. Because, for instance, remember, Tanjiro spent 2 years just trying to train and cut that boulder. Think about the ones that can't even make it through training to get there. And then they get there and think they're the best of the best and just get their asses handed to them. I mean, it has to be. I mean, here's a really interesting question that makes me want to think. I wonder, you know, because we find out stuff much later on that we'll get into later on. But, like, I wonder, like, when the Demon Slayer core was really at its peak. Because, I mean, think about Uro Kodaki, right? Like, I wonder how powerful he was really at his peak at that point in time. I mean, we get into some of the demons later, but that's the thing. These demons have been around for thousands of years, so they know what it's like to fight peak. But I wonder, like, you know, what it was like with the peak core that was there and, like, what they fought, because, like, these demons have been around for so long. And so, for instance, like, even Uro Kodaki, I know he's probably thinking, like, oh, it's amazing you made it back, but, like, dude, like, all you fought was that demon that I literally captured in a box and threw there. Like, it's not that big of a deal, but I'm glad you made it back. But, you know, all these other people have sucked for years, so I'm just impressed you made it. Like, that's great. Like, we haven't had anyone that could actually survive for 50 years, you know? So, like, glad we're finally getting some skin in the game. These kids aren't so soft anymore. So, but I would say it has to be, I don't know about thousands, because, like, the reason I would say not thousands is because, like, the selection process to even get there, you would think their trainers would be like, fuck no, you're not going. You can't even cut a boulder, man. You can't even survive the booby traps on a mountain. Like, fuck no, I'm not letting you go. So I would probably say low thousands, but it's not good. Like, imagine you, like, you just send your kids there, and it's like, it's almost like graduation, right? It's like, yeah, like, my kid made it, like, he's going off to college, and it's like everyone expects him, like, to go and, like, make it out with that degree, and they just go and, like, first class, like, he's already dropped out. Like, he's never coming back. Like, it's just like, could you imagine, like, the core just showing up at your house? Like, yeah, he didn't make it back. Just like, what? Like, what the fuck? I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts?
Bro, I bet they didn't even do that. Probably the deaths are so common. They're just like, well, if they don't come back, you know what happened. They probably don't even, you know, like, how the, like, I don't want to make light of the situation or make it a comical thing. Because obviously, if you've ever had a call or a, police show up your door like this, I'm terribly sorry for you, and I genuinely mean that. But you know how typically when something bad happens to someone in your family and no one knows about it, and the police are the ones to find out, they'll go to your home and knock on the door and tell you the bad news. Now, I like, as awful as that is, at least there's that level of respect of the letting you know what happened. I don't think these Demon Slayer corps did that at all. I think they're just like, well, if they don't come back, you know what happened. We're not going to waste our time going to your house and letting you know, like, this, that, and the third. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I think that it's certainly it has to be in the thousands, though, man. And I know I'm kind of switching up there back to what I was saying, because I'm thinking it really does depend on how often they hold this selection process and how many applicants or contestants they have each time. Because if, let's just say, I don't really know the number, but I'm just going to use whole numbers. Let's just say the leader of the Demon Slayer Corps has been doing this for 200 years. And, like, I find it hard to believe you only hold the final selection once a year. But let's just use it as a random whole number there, so that way we can kind of do a little bit of math. Let's say, and again, it also is going to depend on the class size. Like, how many do, like you had mentioned, of the trainers are, think that their students are ready. But if it's anything like what we've seen, and there's 20 to 30, and only 4 survive, so essentially 26 deaths a year over 200 years, Let's just see what that math would hold up to. And again, this is not actual real numbers. Again, we don't know how often they do this. If they do it twice a year, you double this number. You know what I mean? Who knows? But let's just go 200 times 26. That's 5,200 deaths if it was at base level once a year, 30 contestants a year over a 200-year period. That's not that unrealistic based on what we, have come to see. So can you imagine, 5,000 deaths of people who just went there going to try something and they never come back. Shit's crazy.
Let's really dive into that, though, because think about it, though. Even in the towns, where Tanjiro grew up, remember in episode one, he was the charcoal guy, he would go to the town getting charcoal just to make sure his family was heated up. And he ran into that other guy that took him in while it was nightfall, where the demons, he's like, the Demon Slayer Corps protects us. Think about all the people that can't even get a trainer. Tanjiro had to have Giyu, just by coincidence, ran into Giyu, and Giyu thought something of him because he came up to that. He saw how intelligent he was with that plan, with that axe, and how Nezuko was different, protecting her brother, and something had to be different about these two. And he wrote the guy that probably trained him, Urokodaki, a letter to train him. And even Urokodaki was like, kid's too fucking soft. I'm not training his ass. And then was finally maybe there's something to this kid. But think about that for a minute. How many people probably grow up that's I want to be a demon slayer? And it's bro, you don't even have anyone that can train you. No one wants to train you. They don't think you're good enough. So think about it. They call it final selection. Think about the selection process would probably be a true motherfucker.
Yeah, man, I don't know. It's just the numbers of everything are just astonishing. If you think about the people who wanted to get there in the first place, to who couldn't make it past the initial training round, and then when you get past the initial training round to go to that mountain and survive till daylight, there's just it's hard to quantify. If we had more data in terms of how many people had designs on being a demon slayer from the very beginning, even being trained, think about the people who wanted to be trained, who wouldn't get trained. Then you get past the training part of okay, we'll train you, and then who fail at training. And then the people who don't fail at training and they finally pass training and they go to final selection, fail final selection. It's just the numbers are just massive. There's really no way to quantify it. It's just what it does do is it really gives us a respect for the ones who are able to make it through the process and become demon slayers. You know that there's something special about them, which is kind of funny because we meet one of the characters who makes no sense how he survived.
And, he's my fave.
Oh, dude. So I don't know, man, but it's hard to, it's hard to quantify.
But let's think about that. This will take us into my debate then, which I'll lead part off of that. Do you think this is a very bitter way to do things? Survival of the fittest. Think about Ubiya Shiki, that's ahead of everything. He's in charge of all this shit, right? He's fuck, if they die, they die. It's not my problem. We're just gonna have this every year, however often we do, to see who can get there. But then think about it too, it's kind of one of those reciprocal thoughts of, well, if they can't survive this, how are they going to protect this town? We can't leave these people in the hand of someone that can't even survive. And we're just telling them survive out here. But how bitter is that? It's this is really your first gig to try to get on with this team. This is the interview process. And it's your interview is don't fucking die. If you die, well, so be it. That's just the way it is. Do you think that's kind of a fucked up way to do things?
I don't know what other way you'd do it, though. Unless you just have people. What are you going to do? Just be killed by demons and not have anyone there to try to stop it? Because these demons aren't, they're not going to take it easy. They're not going to be oh, well, this one's not really at my level, so I'm just going to let it kill me. No, you need to be able to have some sort of proficiency, and you need to be able to handle that what comes, because all we've seen so far to this point where we're at here through episode 6 have been very, very low class demons. We've not seen anything So if you're struggling with these guys, you know, you're basically signing your own death warrant when it comes to the upper echelon of the demons. So really, I just don't know how else you'd be able to do it, because if you don't have the best of best, if you don't have a, you know, live or die mentality, you're already fucked from the beginning. So maybe a better way to do it, I just don't know a better way to do it.
Yeah, I don't think you can have like an NFL draft for like the Demon Slayer core. Think about it this way though. Imagine the ones that probably grew up in like royalty or whatever, right? And they're told like, oh, you're going to be the next top of the Demon Slayer. And they get thrown into this. It's like, clearly he wasn't very good. Clearly you didn't train your son very well, because his ass is dead. He didn't even make it out of final selection. We threw him in there with that green guy and he fucking ate his ass. And they're like, what? Like the prince of Tokyo just got like ate to pieces. Like, we spent all this money training him to be part of the core. It's like, well, probably should have had him trained by someone that was a former member of the core, because yeah, you don't have son no more. You better hope your daughter can get in. Like, that's a crazy thought, right?
I feel like you have to be trained by a former member of the core or an active member of the core. I think that's kind of a prerequisite, because Iro Kodaki was a member of the Demon Slayer core. Like you said, he was a Hashira, which obviously we haven't gotten to yet. But just speaking between me and you, you know, I think that you have to get the sign off to even go to the final selection. I think a trainer is gotta be like, yeah, you know, I think he's got what it takes. So it has to. It's not like you can just train with your, you know, knight at arms at the castle. I think you have to be put in front of a either former or active member of the Demon Slayer Corps, and they have to make the recommendation that you partake in the final selection process. That's the only way that would really make sense.
Yeah, and before we close out here, here's a let's go back to Giyu Tomioka for a minute. Let's think about him. What do you think it was when he originally saw Tanjiro Nezuko that made him think, okay, I'm going to take the time out of my day to write a letter to my former trainer to train this motherfucker? Like, do you think it was specifically because Nezuko was such a different type of demon? Or do you think he really saw something different in Tanjiro with the way he reacted, with his intelligence and how he fought and saw compassion for a demon? What do you think it was for him to go to the extra mile versus saying, okay, cool, this guy was really smart and skilled with an axe? I'm sure he's seen that tons of times during his life. I mean, we know this guy. We don't know a lot about him yet, but we know this guy. This isn't no pushover. This guy is the top of the top in his prime right now.
I think there's probably a piece of all the components you mentioned, but if you were to ask me the main driving force of why he wanted Iro Kodaki to train Tanjiro, is because of Nezuko. He's probably fought in his life hundreds of demons. I don't know how old Giyu Tomioka is, but you have to assume he's fought at least hundreds of demons to this point. And this is probably the first time he's ever encountered or experienced a demon trying to protect a human. Remember when Tanjiro's unconscious body was laying there, she got up and like stood in between Tomioka and Tanjiro to protect Tanjiro. And that's, you know, he's never seen a demon do that. All he's ever seen demons do is try to eat human flesh and grow stronger and just be malevolent, you know? So I think that he saw that and was like, whoa, this is not how a demon acts. So there's something special here, something we need to explore. So I think that was the main driving force, but I'm sure the rest of things maybe played a part in it.
Right. I think so too. I wonder if thoughts to you here. Do you think it was also a little bit of maybe he's backed into the corner? Because we'll go into this later on. We don't want to give anything away, but it's not exactly in the rule book to just let a demon go. Do you think that was kind of like Tanjiro's only, like, do you think it was their only option? Or do you think there was an option where he could have just brushed it under the rug, acted like he was never there, and then they're kind of on their own to see if he can figure something out? Or do you think it was like, hey, like, I want this to happen because maybe it was a combination of both. Like, I see something special here, but also, like, I'm not going to get my ass in trouble, so your ass is going to be fucking trained. So what do you think?
It's just I don't know who would be who would like he answer to. You know, it's not like Harry Potter where we're using a clumency and getting inside Tomioka's mind of like, oh, you saw a demon today and you didn't kill it. You know, it'd be like his word against whatever, you know, and he doesn't speak a whole lot. So I'm assuming he has a level of autonomy outside of where he needs to go. He probably has a crow that tells him, hey, you need to go here to do X, Y, and Z. So I'm assuming that, you know, he could just lie if he wanted to. You know, maybe there's an honor code and he wouldn't want to lie. But I don't think that really played a factor. It was like, oh, you know, I'm supposed to kill this thing. Like, I don't think there's any part of him was just like, I'm just gonna let them go on their own. Because obviously, even though she did show in that moment something different than every demon he's ever seen, I feel like if he didn't put them in the right direction or point them in the right direction of a Demon Slayer Core trainer, it would only be a matter of time before they fucked up and she would end up eating a human, because he just wouldn't know what to do. Tanjiro wouldn't know what to do. He had no knowledge. He's in his mind, like, he just learned about demons when his whole family was slaughtered. So you can't just leave him out and, you know, like, how did Loki say? You can't just give people free will and just say, see you later. You know, you gotta, I think that is the whole point, is that he wanted to see if there was a way that they could accomplish the task of keeping her like as innocent and pure of a demon as she could be. And there are maybe one or two other sort of outliers similar to Nezuko, and that we'll actually meet next week, at least one of them, of, you know, a demon who's not the typical demon, I guess I can say.
Yeah, I think so too. That had to be, yeah, like a very odd way of encountering people. And so I think that was kind of what made him lead to that decision. Because, yeah, just like you said, he doesn't talk much and he's not exactly like the favorite of his peers either. Last question before we close out, and I'll let you close this out. Do you think, here's a interesting question. Would you say Tanjiro or Nezuko is the chosen one? Do you think the series has a chosen one? Is it that kind of prophecy, or do you think it's just a gritty story that has a journey with a epic I wouldn't say conclusion, but an epic journey to it with growing pains? Like, does this story really have a chosen one per se?
Probably. I think Nezuko is probably, if you were to label something as the chosen one, it would be her, because she is the driving force behind Tanjiro's adventures. He wants to turn Nezuko back into a human from a demon. It's never been done before. And if she's able, if this is successful for her, she'll be the very, very first one. And from there, maybe can save others along the way, and eventually maybe eradicate demons altogether, at least the evil bad ones and the ones that want to do nothing but cause harm and do things for their own power and things of that nature. So I think that if there is one, it's probably Nezuko.
Yeah, I would say so too, probably. That's a very interesting. That's why some refer to her as the queen of demons, maybe. But with that, man, I'll let you close us out for the day.
Sounds like a plan, brother. Well, folks, if this is the first time that you've tuned into us, we really hope you enjoyed what you heard today and stick around. If you've been with us since the very beginning, thank you for continuously being the shields that guard the realms of fantasy. If you're looking to where you can find us online, we're on all the social sites. So we're on Instagram at @OfficialRidiculousPatronus. We're on TikTok at @RidiculousPatronus. We have a backup Instagram at @fact_or_fantasy. A backup TikTok at @fact_or_fantasy. We have a Facebook fan page, Chase and Josh Factor Fantasy. We're on YouTube at @RidiculousPatronus. We're on Twitter, RP Factor Fantasy. Snapchat, RP Factor Fantasy. And we do have our own website as well, which is ridiculouspatronus.blogspot.com. So please follow, click like, subscribe, leave written reviews, star ratings, comment. All of the audience engagement is super helpful to us here on the show. And in terms of the podcast itself, if you have an Apple product, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. If you are an Android user, you can find us on Google Play. We're also on Spotify. We're on Amazon Music. We're on Audible. We're on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Acast, our host site Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, Chase and Josh Factor Fantasy are there. But we are out for the day because this has been another ridiculous production.
Chase and Josh
Factor Fantasy
signing off.